Thank you for joining us for the first of what will be three total press conferences for the Assembly. My name is Judy Keene. I'm Director of Public Affairs for the USCCB. Joining me today is Bishop Burbidge. He is from the Diocese of Arlington. He is also our chairman for our Committee on Communications for the USCCB, and he will be introducing our panelists today. Bishop.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Hope our conversation today and responses to your questions are of assistance to you. I'm honored to be joined today on this panel by, to my left, Bishop Robert Dealey, who is the Bishop of Portland in Maine, and also the chairman of the Committee on Canonical Affairs and Church Governance. Next to Bishop Dealey is His Eminence Cardinal DiNardo, the Bishop of Galveston-Houston, also, as you know, the president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Also proud to, pleased to introduce Archbishop Gomez, Jose Gomez, the Archbishop of Los Angeles, who is also the Vice President of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you. And with that, we will open the floor for questions. Again, as you probably recall, if you've covered our conferences before, if you could kindly note your name and the news organization that you are with and to whom you are addressing your question, it would be appreciated. And we also have handheld mics. So please wait for the microphone. If you raise your hand and then I'll call upon you, please wait for the mic so that we can be sure to hear your questions. So with that, we will open the floor for questions at this time. Thank you. Yes, JD, just one sec, JD. Okay, we'll wait for the mic. Thank you.
Hi, I'm JD Flynn. I work at Catholic News Agency. I guess my question, Bishop Burbidge, is principally for you and your role in communications, and if anyone else would like to weigh in, I'd certainly welcome it. There's been talk today about transparency, the importance of transparency and accountability as a part of the process of the church's healing from all of this crisis that she's experienced. But I think we in the media know that there are places, there are dioceses which are transparent and forthcoming and which answer questions, and there are dioceses which are still obfuscating or making it difficult to find transparency. The conference doesn't have oversight over that, but what counsel would you have to those dioceses, and what counsel would you have to those of us who are journalists who are finding that transparency has not really manifested itself?
Right. Thank you so much, JD. I think, in a sense, you helped with the answer in acknowledging that, as a conference, we do not have oversight over any particular diocese. But a theme that has been repeated over and over again by the lay faithful to many bishops as they have traveled across their diocese with listening sessions is that transparency will be a great help to them in restoring the trust that we know we must work continually to do. And so I think the bishops who are able to be transparent with the faithful are experiencing some fruits of that process. So certainly something to encourage here at the conference. That is certainly our goal. And I think it's something that the bishops will be embracing.
Okay, next question, Alan. Alan, thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. Cardinal DiNardo, I'm going to ask you what may be the elephant in the room question from obviously the reports over the past week. And I simply want to ask you, as the president of the USCCB, how can you reassure people who obviously see this moment as an opportunity for the bishops to restore credibility and confidence? And yet the reports, of course, out of Houston are questioning even your very authority, and some, of course, asking for your resignation, sir.
Well, first of all, I have been working on, and all of us have been working on these issues for the last year and a half. I've been aggressive about getting to the point where we have this meeting. We've had some bumps in the road relative to even getting to this point. And after November, good things in February, and the situation in May. I think we're in good stead. I'm very, very hopeful. Much will be done today and this week. From the situations, I'm not going to go into what the Houston situation. It strikes me as that's very distinctive. I have very intense disagreements with what has been presented. But from our own local church, I've tried to be very straightforward with my people. I know when we put out the names of the accused, I had a news conference with four stations and all. So I'm really very open and receptive. And I think one of the reasons why we're here is precisely if all these things come together. We need to put together, for lack of a better word, a package, a whole way in which we deal with the issues of transparency, the way we deal with a bishop in the diocese, that there's an accountability. And I think what we're doing this week is very good. I myself am very hopeful when I hear the bishop's question today, when I hear them talking to Bishop Dealey about the aspects of this particular document that we're handling. I think the Pope has been very generous in giving us both universal norms and leeway how we deal with it. And so I'm prepared as president, along with all the other bishops, to push on this so we get it done. I certainly want to see this done. I don't want to see any more delay. I'd like to see this happen. So mine is positive. Mine is, I suppose, global, national, universal. All of this will have effects locally as they are worked out over the course of the months and years ahead. So from my point of view, things are straight away go. And I don't think that this will get in the way. I think if there's, for instance, if you're taking the issue in, say, Baltimore or West Virginia, all of the use of the metropolitan models and all have been so good. They've been so thorough. So to my mind, if there is a slowdown or if there's a bump in the road, I think that only shows up how well and excellently these things have been going since last year. So I'm very positive is all I can tell you. Oh, sure, sure. I think that I can do this pretty well. I've been at it for a while. I've been pushing it.
Next question. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next question right here, a reporter from the AP.
Bishop Dealey, Cardinal Leonardo, there has been...
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. There in some of the comments from the bishops, as well as the comments from the NRB chair, it became really clear that there is some interest, or a lot of interest, in getting lay people involved in investigations. Why not make it a requirement and not just leave it as a suggestion or recommendation as part of the documents?
Because we are publishing directives of how a particular document is to be implemented. And the document gives flexibility to how it's going to be applied. And you can't put into legislation what is not already in the governing document. The governing document is Vos Estis, which is the Pope's letter. And where the Pope gives flexibility to the Metropolitan as to how he is going to conduct investigation, even though there is an encouragement that there be lay people involved, we felt that we had to give that same thing. We're not going beyond what the Holy Father has given.
I think he's giving a canonical answer, you know, but I mean, Metropolitans, you know, I can just consider myself, yeah, lay people are absolutely essential to all this. So to answer your part of the question, but when we deal with the canonical question and all, I think you go as far as you can and you recommend as far as you can. I think that's...
I think myself, it would be foolhardy for any Metropolitan. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is that we're not, that there isn't a one of us as a bishop who is not completely invested in the lay people who help us to do our work. It is as if in some of these conversations we have this thing where the lay people are over here and we're over here. I can't do what I do in the diocese without the support and the help of the lay people who assist me in that. And I think that's the same, it's going to be the same in this instance.
That's what I was going to add also, is it's important to look at practice. As Bishop Dealey was just saying, bishops in this country have been and continue to use lay expertise in any chancery, in any review board or consultation, bodies of consultation. It's lay people and their expertise and their wisdom. So look at the practice. We're not looking to do anything less with involving the lay. We're trying to find new ways to increase their involvement. So the practice here in the United States, I think, really helps to answer your question.
Okay, additional questions. Let's go with Chris here. Thank you.
Chris Gunty from Catholic Review here in Baltimore. Bishop Dealey, that was a pretty robust discussion, even though it was just questions for clarification. Do you anticipate from that a lot of amendments before 5 p.m. tomorrow that your committee is going to have to look through on Wednesday night?
I think that's possibly true, though we spent almost 5 hours yesterday on amendments. So I do think that what was covered today was just repeat of amendments that we've already looked at. But we will we'll see what people come up with tomorrow.
Okay, Judy, one more time. Oh, I'm sorry, you know what, Juliet, yes.
Hi, my name is Juliet Linderman. I'm with the Associated Press. This question is for Cardinal DiNardo. You have in the past returned credibly accused priests to full ministry after sending them to rehab or therapy or other kind of treatment. Why should Catholics have faith in such in-house treatment centers when they've played such a central role in returning abusive priests to ministry with a clean bill of health?
The first question I would raise, for some, I don't generally answer any questions locally. That's not what I do. But one would make a distinction between credibly accused of abusing minors. When you're dealing with adults, there's a distinction there. But as I said before and earlier, I'm not here to answer questions locally. I think that the reputation that we have, what I've done, is good. I think that what I'm trying to get done here in the United States Conference, along with my brother bishops, is very straightforward. As you know, we were up against some real challenges in the past year, not only for what we wanted to do, but even Rome at one point told us to, you know, be careful, hold the line, and we did. And our patience and listening proved very good. If you look at the document that comes from Rome, the motu proprio of the Holy Father, the first part of it addresses themes with priests, deacons, and religious that you can see bear some semblance to the Charter of Protection, Youth and Children. So, and the second part is some of the things we asked already for November last year. So I think I'm in good stead, I think, to say that we're in the United States bishops are very happy that we're moving step by step through a very difficult time in our church. And I think that these particular norms in use and adapted as we are permitted in some places, as Bishop Dealey has said, will prove to be very, very good for us in the United States and for the church. And I think that people will see this working out in practice, and I can't help but feel a certain amount of hope in light of all this. So I'm pretty positive about it all.
Okay, the gentleman from CNS.
Hi, I'm Mark Pattison, the gentleman from CNS. Question for Archbishop Gomez regarding faithful citizenship. You talked about in your presentation about that you're going to obviously keep issues that are of concern to the bishops in the document. What about the structure of the document itself, and is there a way to inform Catholics of the scope of the bishop's policy portfolio in a universe that's kind of now enmeshed with the Twitterverse in 280 characters or less? What are the tensions involved in trying to get across the bishop's message in a way that doesn't seem dumbed down but is yet accessible?
Thank you for your question. I think it's, I mean, the plan that we have is to keep the document that we already have, faithful citizenship. The whole document is going to be published again because that's the basic teachings of the church on public life and the issues that we are important for us Catholics as we participate in the political life. Together with that, as I said, it's going to be a letter that's going to address specific areas that are important for us at this time. And then also a series of videos, short videos that can support the same letter and the teachings of the church on these specific issues. So I think that we are trying to make it kind of personal, realistic, and appropriate for what we are going through in our country at this time. So I think the basic teachings are right there in the document. So I hope that you all read the document too.
In my role as communications chair, I could say that the communications committee has been consulted throughout this process of how we will communicate the message. Our teaching ministry has to find support and assistance. So already the experts, which include lay experts, as consultants on our committee, have already had input on how we might do it. But we are going to certainly have to rely on our local communications directors. We don't want to come up with a document and say, okay, this is a great document. We'll keep it on the shelf here. Get it out. And let's use every means possible. And that's where we're blessed throughout diocese in the country with some really gifted communications directors. And that's what we're going to ask them to help us to do.
Great. And I think we've got time for one more question. So let's go with the reporter. I'm sorry, I can't remember your first name. Oh, okay. That should be easy. That's mine.
Hi, I'm Julie Zosmer from the Washington Post. Question for Bishop Dealey. As you're looking at how to implement this metropolitan model, there's been one investigation in this model, Archbishop Lurie investigating Bishop Bransfield in West Virginia. How do you feel that that went, and how has that informed your view of the metropolitan model?
Thank you for that, because it also gives me a chance to say there have been at least four investigations in the last year. The one in Wheeling, Charleston was one. The Cardinal McCarrick investigation was also a metropolitan. It came in, the report was made to Rome, and it becomes the model for the way in which we're setting this up. And there were at least two other investigations that I know of involving auxiliary bishops that were also used. And it worked in the sense that it addressed the question, it did the investigation, and it brought it to the attention of the Holy See. So I think that's what we're trying to do, and so I think that those were each of them was done in a little bit different way, but basically the fundamental part of it was report was given to the Metropolitan consulted with the nuncio, consulted with the Holy See, and got permission for the Metropolitan to do the investigation. The investigation was completed, and it was given to the Holy See. So I think that gives us hope that this will, in fact, be able to work.
I think the Metropolitan models that we're adapting it's going to prove very, very good. It's like anything. It takes us time to build it up. I think the work that has been done by our committees, I want to salute them in a short time since the motu proprio, have been very good. We have to get into the nitty-gritty details of this, and we will take care of it after we approve, I hope, this time. I think this offers us the best opportunity of our credibility to increase and improve as we see it working out in practice, just as the Charter for the Protection of Children and Youth showed itself in time, working very well. So, yes.
I was also impressed with the fact that the Holy Father's document has a three-year period on it, and we have duplicated that in our own. So that gives us this is a working document. This is a working implementation, and we have a meeting later today to talk with metropolitans about how this is going to be done, or how we start with this, and as we move forward, we will find the ways to refine the the process.
Great. So I, pardon? All right. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
I just want to follow up on that.
Microphone.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, and thank you, Bishop.
Sure.
So it's obvious that you guys can make moral agreements beyond the law, because acknowledging our Episcopal commitment is one of them, and the Charter is one of them. So you could make
a... What was that?
The standards, the code of conduct for bishops is a moral agreement that goes beyond the law, as does the Charter itself. I mean, it's a moral agreement. So isn't it true that in this three-year experimental period, the metropolitans could make a moral agreement between themselves to use review boards in the process? I mean, isn't that what you're saying, Bishop?
We don't understand your question.
I don't understand.
If you can make a moral agreement, as you do in the code of conduct, the acknowledging our Episcopal commitment or whatever it's called, you said before that you can't contravene the law of vos estes, but you could make a moral agreement to go beyond the law, to agree, for example, to use review boards in the process of investigating vos estes type claims, right? I mean, isn't that kind of
the metropolitans could, but sure. The document can't, because the document,
sure.
Then that would become particular law, which would require the process, sure. Which goes into making law.
But the
metropolitans, so this is,
could.
I'm not. I don't think. I think the standard. I didn't work on the Episcopal commitment document, but I think that that's a restatement of things that are in the law already, and bringing them to the fore as to what our responsibilities to each other are.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think that.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Your Eminence, Your Excellencies.